Retro.
Go.
Fido.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance, go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
And greetings from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is the April 15th, 2012 edition of Space Talk, live on the air right here on WMMB. Thanks for tuning into our program as we look forward to what is sure to be a very emotional week for a lot of us on the Space Coast as we say goodbye to the Space Shuttle Discovery, which is scheduled to fly out of the Kennedy Space Center on Tuesday, destined for the National Air and Space Museum in our nation's capital. That is going to be the focus of our program today. No, we're not going to talk about North Korea's missile launch at all. Today we're going to talk about the work that has been done to prepare not only Discovery, but Atlantis and Endeavour as well for their retirement and display at museums around the country, including, thankfully, right here at the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex. Stephanie Stilson is NASA's manager in charge of those preparations at KSC, and she will be my guest on the program today. So if you have any questions for her or comments on any space-related topic that you'd like to share, feel free, as always, to give us a call at 321-768-1240. Or if you'd prefer to send us something by email, again, the address we monitor all the time here in the studio is spacetalking@AOL.com. Hey, before we get started, I do want to share a couple of quick personal thoughts with you, things that have come up here. First, as many of you know, I did spend 4 months in the hospital last year. I talked a little bit about my experience with Bill Mick during Space Talk's Return to Flight broadcast in February. Well, if you're interested in learning a little bit more about my ordeal, I direct your attention to the current issue of Space Coast Living's Health Magazine, available, I think, in doctor's offices all around the county, which has a feature in it about my stay at Kindred Hospital in Melbourne. There is a version of the story online, and I've added a link to it on the Space Talk page at WMMBAM.com. So check it out if you'd like. Leave a comment if you'd prefer to do that, and hope you get something out of that. Anyway, second, I want to send a shout-out to Mark Dakotas, who just recently spent his final day as an employee at Florida Today. Mark has been a part of that newspaper for, oh gosh, I don't know, something close to 30 years. He was there when I started at the paper in 1988. And during the 12 years after that that I spent there, we worked together on a whole bunch of stuff. While he is most recently known for his work on the sports pages and as the paper's resident NASCAR expert, you may not know that it was Mark Dakotas who started Florida Today's first adventures in going online back in the 1990s, originally with the CompuServe Information Service. How many of you remember that? Which actually predated AOL by a couple of years. This was back when personal desktop computers were just beginning to make their big move into people's homes. I think Windows 3.1 was yet to come out, and the ATEX mainframe system we used at the newspaper couldn't even communicate directly with a desktop PC. There was no way to wire them together, at least not initially. So each morning, and I think this was about 1994 time frame, Mark would come into the office, pick the best stories from that day's paper, and then sit there at his desk and actually retype them into the computer word for word. The stories would cover local crime, politics, sports, and the space program. And we quickly found that basically no one who was reading any of our local stories online at the time, but people from all over the world were reading the space stories, making comments and sending us email. So I guess long story short, maybe I should have Mark on at some point. There's a lot of space-related stories to talk about those early days of covering things online. But anyway, out of that initial experience, I joined him, and together we created Space Online, which was really the first space-related news site of its kind on the World Wide Web Of course, things have changed a lot during the past 25 years, but it was Mark Dacotas who really deserves most of the credit for starting something at Florida Today that in the years since has grown to fundamentally change the entire newspaper business. Mark is by no means ready to retire, so I do wish him well as he and his wife Pam plot their next adventures in life together. Well, anyway, with our remaining moments, let's offer up some thoughts. Here is my contribution for this week's broadcast blog, Orbital Inclinations. 2 weeks ago, the CBS News television program 60 Minutes broadcast a piece about Brevard County entitled Hard Landing. The segment focused on several Space Coast workers and local business owners who were directly affected by the decision in 2004 to end the space shuttle program. And while telling their stories, the accompanying pictures showed scenes of economic devastation, including boarded-up businesses and abandoned homes with lawns overgrown with weeds. I've watched the segment several times now, and each time I look at it, I am filled both with sadness and frustration. Sadness, of course, because there is absolutely no denying the serious impact the decision to end the shuttle program has had on thousands of very good, decent, and hardworking people who were and are our friends, family, and neighbors. And while the 60 Minutes piece takes political shots at the president and Congress, and the debate in the space community continues to rage on over who is to blame for where we're at today and whether or not we're on the right path to the future, all within the subtext of frenzied election year posturing, none of that helps to soften the hard landing that CBS speaks of. Those are real people, and they deserve to be heard and respected. But my respect only goes out to the people featured in the story, not to the story itself. I reacted with frustration because 60 Minutes didn't tell the whole story, and what they showed was misleading to the extreme and clearly not an example of objective and quality journalism. As reporter Scott Pelley says at some point, have a look around Brevard County. It's shrinking. Lots of people are moving away, taking businesses down with them. And while what he said, word for word, is absolutely technically true, he doesn't tell you that the buildings being shown have looked that way for years, long before the end of the shuttle program. Committing a sin of omission appears all too easy for CBS. I'm told that in putting this piece together, Pelley and the 60 Minutes crew were toured around the Kennedy Space Center and shown all the things being done out there that are building toward our future plans for space exploration. Pelley's only reference to that effort was to say, at the very least, it will be 5 years before America flies astronauts again. And there was no mention of all the other aerospace work being done in Brevard County, including the efforts by SpaceX, whose founder Elon Musk was practically gushed over by the very same reporter in a 60 Minutes piece that aired a week earlier. Nor was there even a hint of acknowledgement of all the other industries in Brevard County that drive our economic engine. No longer does this country solely rely on the space program for its fiscal well-being. Now, I understand the piece focused on the people and their stories. And I will say again, their stories deserve to be told. Yes, the shuttle workforce here was devastated with the end of the program, and the wisdom of that decision will be debated for years to come. Yes, there are fewer workers here now, and the economic ripple effects are real and hurtful. But neither Brevard County nor the Kennedy Space Center is the ghost town suggested by CBS. And that's this week's Orbital Inclinations. Well, we're going to continue talking about the end of the shuttle program and Discovery's flyout to the Smithsonian this week when we do return following our first break. The phone lines are open for your questions or comments about anything having to do with our space program. Give us a call at 321-768-1240 or send an email to spacetalking@aol.com. Please stay tuned. When we come back, we'll have Stephanie Stilson on the phone with us from the Kennedy Space Center to talk about Discovery's flyout. I'm Jim Banky. You're listening to Space Talk right here on WMMB. And welcome back to Space Talk, everyone. 321-768-1240 is the number to call to participate in the program today. Or you can send us, also send us an email to spacetalking@aol.com. As we begin talking now about the departure of Space Shuttle Discovery for Washington, D.C. this Tuesday morning, weather permitting. The ferry flight is to begin at 7 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time from the Kennedy Space Center and is likely to include a low pass along the beaches near Cape Canaveral and Cocoa Beach. I'll be out at the shuttle landing facility to say goodbye to Discovery, and we'll call into the Bill Mix Show to let everyone know what's going on and when you might be able to go outside for a chance to, well, see something pretty incredible. As for how those ferry flights are proceeding, or the plans are proceeding at the moment anyway, we have the most knowledgeable person on the phone with us right now. Stephanie Stilson is the NASA manager in charge of preparing all of the orbiters for their retirement here at Kennedy Space Center, and she joins us today from her home in Cocoa. Stephanie, how are you doing today?
Doing well, Jim. Thank you very much.
Well, good. Thanks for being on. I don't even know how to start. You have had an incredibly busy week. I've seen you all over the media. You've been working weird hours as Discovery rolls out and gets put on top of the thing and all of that. How are you holding up?
Doing well. You know, I'm an operational girl at heart, and so this is the kind of thing that I thrive on and I love doing. It's great to be a part of something that's a huge undertaking, and just being in the thick of it is a great thing for me.
Well, I'm glad you say you're an operational girl. Let's remind everybody a little bit about your background. Tell us a little bit about your experience out of KSC and what you've been up to all these years.
Well, I actually started working at Kennedy Space Center as a cooperative education student when I was in college. So back in 89, I'd always wanted to work for NASA since I was in the third grade and visited the visitor center, and was fortunate enough to start as a college student and learn what NASA did and what KSC did. And then when I graduated, I started full-time in 95 and then moved around a little bit, started in shuttle, moved to payloads, eventually worked station, and then ended up taking the job with Discovery in 2000. So I've been with Discovery's team since 2000.
A long time. And you know, we don't want to get off on a tangent, but the co-op program, I just want to mention that because that is so key. If you're a college student out there and you want to get a job doing this, isn't the co-op program a great way to go?
It really is. You know, I get to talk to students quite a bit, and really, especially in engineering. I don't know about everybody else, but when I was still in high school, I had no idea what it meant to be an engineer.
Yeah.
So when you get a chance to go and experience the real-world life as an engineer and what that means, it really helps guide you as to where you want to take your career.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about the preparations and how we got to where we are today, but tell us really quickly, you've been checking in with the folks. Where are we at right now? I think Discovery is on top of the 747. Is it hard-mated yet, or how far are you along?
It is. Actually, we made very good progress today. We had a little bit of an issue yesterday with winds being too high, so we had to stop operations yesterday and move everything into today. But actually, we are hard-mated and actually have the sling disconnected as well. So great job by the team today getting through everything. And we're going to be set tomorrow morning to back out of the mate-demate device to provide a view of Discovery on top of the shuttle carrier aircraft first thing in the morning, is assuming weather's good tomorrow morning, which it looks like it will be.
Yeah, how does the weather look for Tuesday? What's the wing telling you at this point?
Oh, right now we had a weather briefing at 2 o'clock, and things are looking pretty good from a Kennedy perspective and also an in-route perspective. There's a little bit of concern up in the Dulles area, so it might affect the flyovers. But Kathy Winters, our weather officer, doesn't think right now there's anything to give us real concern about Tuesday.
Yeah, that's outstanding. I know it's always a tough call to get the 747 across the country, but really if you can just get it off the runway and get it on its way, then we should be good to go. Hey, talk a little bit more about the process. You know, we're so used to it, and it's still kind of a strange thing even to talk about it after all these years. You're putting this giant, you know, 100-ton orbiter on top of the 747, what I like to call the world's biggest biplane. You know, talk about a little bit how that's done. You know, you mentioned the mate-demate device. That sounds kind of interesting to some people, I think. Walk us through from a very basic layman's point of view of how you do this process of getting it onto the 747 and out of here.
Sure. Well, actually, the task with using the mate-demate device, we've done that many times before. We have a mate-demate device here at Kennedy and also out of Dryden. So anytime we land out west, that's how we would get the orbiter on top of the 747 to get it back to Kennedy. And back when we used to do maintenance out in Palmdale, we would do the same thing in reverse here at Kennedy. We'd load up the orbiter and send it out west for maintenance and then bring it back. So we're very accustomed with doing that work. But you're right, it's a complicated task. Basically, that mate-demate device allows us to use a sling to lift the orbiter up high enough to retract the landing gear. Then we take it all the way up to about 60 feet so that we can bring in the shuttle carrier aircraft or the 747 underneath the orbiter. Then we slowly lower the orbiter down and mount it onto the attach points for the shuttle carrier aircraft, bolt that down, and then we're able to remove the sling. At that point, we're ready to back out of the mate-demate device and ferry cross-country or wherever we need to go, in this case up the East Coast.
And for this procedure, given the fact that it's basically ready to go for the museum, is it different in any way? Are there less hazardous things you got to worry about, or is it still just, you know, I mean, obviously it's safety all the way, but are there less things you got to deal with?
There are less things, and the main thing being, in the past, when we were flying vehicles that were going to fly in space again, we still had hazards on those vehicles. So we had to treat that vehicle as a hazardous object. Now we've removed those hazards, so they take that piece of it out. And then also the vehicle's no longer powered. In the past, we would have to run power from the shuttle carrier aircraft up into the orbiter so that when it got to cold temperatures up in the air, we could maintain the right temperature levels for all the avionics boxes and so forth. So we don't have to do any of that. But from the outside of the vehicle and the criteria for flying, it's the same criteria because the orbiters are very fragile. And so you don't want to fly through any type of precipitation because that moisture basically turns into little BBs that will tear up the tiles.
Right.
And obviously we want to deliver Discovery up to the Smithsonian in the best shape possible.
Yeah, and so now give us a little sense of, and we've talked a little bit about it on the show, and I think people are kind of generally familiar what's going to happen, but talk about what's going to happen Tuesday. Kind of run us down a timeline of what we can expect.
Okay, Tuesday morning we start off with a weather briefing at 4 a.m., and according to what comes out of the weather forecast, the ferry manager, Don McCormick, will make the decision as to whether or not we're ready to go, and we'll take off. And if weather's good, we'll look to get out of Kennedy right after sunrise, right around 7 a.m. And you also have the Pathfinder, which is a C-9 plane that flies out in front of the shuttle carrier aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
And that allows for reconnaissance so you can tell if there's any precipitation because forecasts aren't always perfect. We know
right,
that.
Right.
So you actually have the Pathfinder out there 30 minutes ahead. And if the Pathfinder runs into any type of precipitation, they radio back to the SCA and help them divert around it. So that will really help us avoid any bad weather along the way.
Remind us what a C-9 looks like.
Oh. Goodness, it's the plane itself, I think, holds about 35 to 40 people, military-type aircraft. People always tease me because I have the opportunity to ride on the Pathfinder, and it's not the most luxurious ride you can be on, for sure. Not very much climate control, no stewardesses bringing you drinks or peanuts, but, you know, we're there to do a job, and it's important. The Pathfinder was even more important when we were flying vehicles that were hazardous because every
right.
time we would have to land, the team would be there to do inspections and to do sniffers and things like that to ensure that we had no off-gassing or anything that would be of concern wherever we did land.
Is there an airliner that it looks like?
You know, I can't give you – I'd call it like a small jet, really, would
small,
be probably
like
a
little
good,
business jet
yeah,
kind
analogy.
Of thing.
Right, yes, yes.
Well, because and the thing I wanted to get at was, you know, obviously we hope that this thing is going to be able to fly over the beaches, and I don't know if you know what the exact path is going to be. I know what they've generally been like in the past. But I wondered if folks could go out early and see if the C-9 was going to fly over them, there'd be a good shot that the 747 is going to fly over them.
I don't think the C-9 is going to be doing the flyover portion of it. Once again, Don McCormick, ferry manager, they decide all those things. So I think basically you're going to have to go on the timelines and the announcements that are coming out of the public affairs group to let folks know, you know, the general time frame to be looking up and hopefully get a glimpse of it.
Yeah, it's going to be spectacular. So it's going to take off 7 a.m. or so. Basically fly, do the flyovers, and then back one more time over KSC and then heading up north. Is that your idea of what's going to happen?
Yes, it is.
Okay, that's great. Okay, now we've just got a couple of minutes. Let's now go way back in time. 2004, the decision made, rightly or wrongly, not what we're going to talk about today, to end the program. At what point do you, NASA, KSC, and the whole shuttle team start thinking about what are we going to do after this in terms of the safing and the museum and the ferry flights? When did that all become visible in your workload?
Well, right away, obviously, at the time frame, folks in our program office, which is in Johnson Space Center, immediately got involved. So they've been working this since back then. Myself and my team got involved. For me, it was actually before Discovery had the last launch. So back, we launched in February. So a couple months before that was when I got asked to join the team and be a part of the transition and retirement. So, but folks, like I said, have been working it much longer than even I have. But from a processing perspective, that's when we jumped in and started, of course, thinking about how to safe these vehicles, what that was going to take. And then once we had the announcement for where they were going, we immediately started working with those display sites to talk not only what the museums wanted in regards to the vehicle, but also dealing with the airfields, because that's the huge part of our offload activities is being at the airfield and setting up our wind restraint system and being prepared to offload the orbiters when we get there.
So Discovery heading to Washington, and then with Enterprise going to New York to Intrepid, and Enterprise kind of out of your hair for a long time, Have you been directly, has the team been involved in the enterprise plans? Are your folks involved in helping figure out how to do that?
Absolutely, and that was one of the things that I felt very fortunate about, because I had not had any involvement with enterprise at all. And February of this year, we did go up to NASM and spent about a month there doing all the final touches to Enterprise to get her ready to ferry. So we had to ensure that she was ready to go. We had to install the tail cone. We had to remove the fake pods that were on there, install what we call our Alta pods that were ferry worthy. Mm-hmm. So a lot of good work had to happen there. So that gave me a chance to get connected with Enterprise. And then, of course, we're dealing with the JFK airfield. And as soon as we drop off Discovery, we unload Enterprise, and we'll head straight up to JFK and start that process with Enterprise. So actually, we'd love to have a little bit of stand-down time in between, but the nature of Enterprise already being at Smithsonian, it made sense for us to pick it up immediately and take it up north.
Stephanie, this is going to be one of those shows I wish we had 2 hours. We're already at the halfway point. Pause right now. We're going to take a five-minute built-in hold. Come back with more with Stephanie Silson talking about Discovery's flyoff from KSC on Tuesday. I'm Jim Benke. You're listening to Space Talk on WMMB.
Fox News Radio, I'm Liz White. Cleanup throughout the Midwest after 100 tornadoes reportedly touched down.
The chainsaws are going all over town. Everybody out helping their neighbors now clean up debris. The Red Cross is out as they do. They get out so quickly, and they're here passing out water and coffee and food to people who might need those supplies.
Fox's Rick Reichmuth in Thurman, Iowa, where this man's counting his blessings.
No major injuries, which is the greatest thing. We can rebuild the houses. We can rebuild the town. We can't rebuild those lives.
In the Woodward, Oklahoma area, lightning reportedly knocked out a warning system. 5 people died in that storm. The storm system heading east now. A Taliban spokesman tells the AP its fighters are equipped to attack anywhere in Afghanistan after launching a coordinated series of attacks today in Kabul. 17 militants reportedly killed, 31 others injured. Fox News, we report, you decide.
From the Fox Sports studios in Los Angeles, here's Turk Stevens.
We begin with the NBA. They're early in the fourth. The Heat lead the Knicks 71-68. LeBron James 25. Dwayne Wade with 20. Carmelo Anthony 33 to lead the Knicks. Coming up bottom of the hour, Lakers hosting the Mavs. Mavs 0-3 against the Lakers this year. Stanley Cup playoffs, game 3. Nashville wins in Detroit 3-2 to lead the series 2-1. Just underway, Pittsburgh at Philadelphia, game 3. The Flyers leading the series 2-0. To baseball, National League, Astros lead the Marlins 3-2 in the sixth. Mets over the Phillies 2-1 in the fifth. Ike Davis with a 2-run homer. Braves 5, Brewers 1 in the fourth. Chipper Jones a 3-run shot. Jason Hayward a solo blast for Atlanta. Reds lead the Nationals 5-3 in the fifth. Ryan Ludwig with a grand slam. Cardinals 2, Cubs nothing in the third. American League, Red Sox over the Rays 4-0 in the fifth. Jays with 6 in the sixth. Lead the Orioles 7-2. Rangers and Twins scoreless there in the third inning in Minnesota.
The weather is brought to you by MyFWC.com. Life jackets save lives. Wear it, Florida. Partly sunny and breezy for this afternoon. I have 79 to 83. Partly cloudy and breezy tonight. We'll see a shower in spots. Low of 67 to 70. Times of clouds and sun with a shower in spots as you head back to work tomorrow. High of 81 to 83. Partly sunny and a breezy day again as we head into Tuesday. High of 81 to 85. From the Florida Weather Center, I'm Jason Lord.
When news happens, hear it here. News Talk 1240 and 1350 WMMB.
Is there anyone within the sound of my voice that is now awake?
Glenn Beck.
Or is it the same group of people? Have they done such an effective job that you can't wake anyone up? Is there anybody new to the table that didn't see it before or refused to see it, or the case just hadn't been made yet?
Is on 9 to noon weekdays.
That is now awake. In the last 2 months, you've gone, whew, you know what?
On WMMB.
Wow.
And online at WMMBAM.com.
Brevard's best dining discounts and more. Buying great deals on restaurants, spas, and entertainment, all at 50% off. Right now, simply log on to WMMBAM.com, keyword deals, to purchase your discount deal for 50% off. Brevard's best dining discounts and more is full of great dining ideas, fun things to do, and a great discount service. Don't know what to do for that special date? Check out Brevard's best dining discounts today for great ideas at 50% off. To buy a 50% discount, log on to WMMBAM.com. AM.com. Keyword deals. They are first come, first serve. Dining discounts and more at Keyword Deals.
I'll have the grilled cheese, please.
Hot or cold?
Hot isn't grilled hot.
We're still looking to hire a cook for the summer season, so cold?
But your name is Hot Grilled Cheeseria.
Yeah, I can give you bread and cheese, and you can try grilling it on your exhaust manifold.
Don't be stuck without a chef or any other seasonal employee you need. Log on to SpaceCoastHelpWanted.com.
You know, if you have heated seats, you could sit on it and have a panini.
Okay.
Post as many jobs as you like in minutes and use as many words as you want for one low price. SpaceCoastHelpWanted.com. Long name, amazing results. Ms. Munchler, would you file these documents, please?
Oh, okay, after I take your temperature.
Why are you a receptionist?
Well, because I couldn't find a nursing job.
Then why didn't you go online and check out SpaceCoastHelpWanted.com?
Okay, sir, take off your shirt and I'll take your blood pressure.
They have hundreds of local jobs, hospital, sales, IT.
Oops, sorry.
Your blood pressure just went sky high.
Oh, boy.
Okay, I'm going to need a specimen. Take this.
Get out! SpaceCoastHelpWanted.com. Long name, amazing results.
Providing you with the type of programming that's been known to start prison fights. 1240 and 1350, WMMB.
Never suffer the humiliation of missing a part of Bill Make Live. Download it in its entirety and listen till it makes you sick. At WMMBAM.com. Keyword podcast.
Happening in space, Jim Behnke is there. Okay, well, not in space, but he's all about it. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
Sorry, welcome back to everybody. Our second half of Space Talk on WMMB. Phone lines open for your contributions to the conversation we're having today about the retirement of the space shuttles, plans for Discovery's departure from the Kennedy Space Center on Tuesday morning. Love to hear what you have to say about it or any questions you might have for NASA's Stephanie Stilson. Give us a call, 321-768-1240, or send us an email with your questions or comments to spacetalking@AOL.com, as Jerry from Rockledge has done, and we'll ask his question to Stephanie in just a moment. But I also have on the other line, I invited John Stein, Director of Marketing out at the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex, to join us for a couple of minutes here and tell us really quick how, at least from the visitor complex point of view, the public can get an up-close personal look at this really historic departure of Discovery from the shuttle landing facility. John, how you doing today?
I'm good, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Yeah, just want to just take a real quick couple of minutes to tell us what the public has available to us through your facility up there at the visitor complex.
All right, Jim. Well, you know, yesterday and today we've been running special drive-by tours of the near the shuttle landing facility of the mate-demate process. So our guests have had a chance to see up close just this incredible feat and how it's mounted and how it's prepared for the launch on Tuesday. And then tomorrow we're going to have a number of things on hand, and that it's going to include astronauts from both the original Discovery mission, STS-41D, specifically Hank Hartsfield, Mike Mullane, Charlie Walker, and we'll also have the crew from the last space shuttle, the entire crew. And they will be out at 4:45. We're going to have the entire group on hand at 4:45 for a special presentation, followed by photo opportunities and the Hubble exhibit at the IMAX Theater.
Okay.
In addition to that, we'll have the special viewing of The Dream is Alive, which is about the shuttle program and talks.
Classic IMAX.
Yes, absolutely. And then Hank, Mike, and Charlie will also be featured as the guest host in our Lunch with an Astronaut program. So a great day tomorrow just to really get a handle on you know, the individuals that flew the first and the last missions of Discovery, and just going to be a spectacular day. And then on Tuesday, we will have a opportunity for our guests to see a flyby once Discovery takes off, which is going to be at 6:52 in the morning. It's going to go down the beach, but it's going to do a special pass over the visitor complex right where the Rocket Garden is. So it's going to be an incredible backdrop for the flyby. And we're going to have Charlie and Hank. They will both be there in the morning to host the flyover. So there'll be kind of like a play-by-play, a narrative of that.
Sure.
And then we'll follow that with they'll have some book signings, and The Dream is Alive will also be featured there at the Visitor Complex.
So and, what time, John, Tuesday can folks start arriving there? I know it's all standard admission, but what time do they get to start showing up?
Yeah, they can get there as early as they'll start showing up probably by 5:30, but we'll have the gates open ready to go at 6 o'clock, and then of course they can move right over to the Rocket Garden Gym where they'll be able to view the flyby.
And then after it's all done about 7:30 or so, are you gonna be fully cranked up for the day then and ready to go, or do folks need to leave and then come back?
No, they'll be able to stay right there, and we'll have IMAX open, we'll have the Shuttle Launch Experience open, and then shortly after that we'll open the rest. But there'll be plenty to do right at the close of the flyby.
Good, John. I know it's gonna be a busy time. It's a great opportunity for not only the public but our guests in Florida to really get a treat here and see something special, and I appreciate you being on the air to talk to us about it.
Thanks, Jim. And just one last thing I want everyone to know is that, you know, we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy Space Center this year, and we are very privileged to put a special offer out there right now, $50 on our annual pass, and just a tremendous offer. It's only $5 more than the regular price of a regular one-day admission, and gives our guests a full year to see, you know, witness these special events as well as launches that we have scheduled coming up and other great events. We'll have Endeavor flying out, of course, in September. So if people are interested in looking at wanting to come out and see what's going on, it's a tremendous value, Jim.
That's great. John, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you again soon, okay?
Thanks for having me, Jim.
All right, you bet. Kennedy Space Center VisitorComplex.com is the website for more information about what's going on up there. And Stephanie Stilson, again, thanks for hanging on with us. We had a question from Jerry from Rockledge wanting to know that once Discovery arrives up at the Smithsonian at the Udvar-Hazy annex out there. Are there other things that needs to be done to it before it goes on display, or is it basically ready to roll right into the hangar?
No, actually, we do have some work to do. The major task that we have to do is remove the tail cone. You know, put the tail cone on the aft of the vehicle to provide aerodynamics and protect the engines.
Sure.
So that will have to come off because Discovery is going to be displayed as if it had just landed. And obviously, tail cone's not installed when we're
right
for a mission. So
yeah,
we'll take that off. And that's about a 6,000-pound piece of hardware that's in three – or actually six separate pieces.
Right.
So it takes an overhead crane and so forth to get the pieces off and a stand and everything. So a lot of work to do that. We will also need to jack and level the vehicle to get to a point where we can take the tail cone off. Once the tail cone's off, we will reposition the engines, flare them back out as opposed to having them in the snug, tucked-in configuration.
Right.
We'll close vent doors and do some minor things, install some platforms in the mid-body and the forward, and do things that Smithsonian has asked us to do since we're the ones that are they're used to working on this vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
But we plan to be done, wrapped up, and out of there by the end of the month and have turned everything over to the Smithsonian at that point.
And once it's turned over, and I don't know if you know all the legal issues, but, I mean, it's still NASA's on loan to the Smithsonian. Is that basically the deal?
You know, I'm not sure about that.
I'm not sure how they do
the title. I believe the Smithsonian actually has the title. But obviously, you know, when we had Enterprise up there, there were times that we as NASA needed to go investigate things on Enterprise, and the Smithsonian fully supported that. And if we need to do the same thing with Discovery, I know that the curator, Dr. Valerie Neal, would be more than happy to help us in any way she could.
Well, and that brings up an interesting point, too. And first of all, in terms of your involvement, once it's turned over, you know, the maintenance of it, keeping it clean, keeping it in a good shape. I mean, that's all part of the museum curator work, and they're experts at doing that kind of thing. But the thing about Discovery that we keep talking about is that it is the ship of record, the shuttle of record, the vehicle of record. I don't know exactly how you want to say it. But whereas Atlantis and Endeavor are stripped down of parts and things and whatever, Discovery is what? As close to real as it possibly can be and still be safe to be on display? Is that the setup?
Absolutely, and the term we use is the vehicle of record, so you're right about that. And basically that was because Smithsonian wanted to be able to say that, hey, we have a vehicle that in the future, if engineers 100 years from now need to see how these orbiters operated, they could climb around these vehicles and do that. So we basically did the best we could to leave it intact. Now, there are certain things that had to come out for safing purposes, the largest things being in the OMS pod, the orbiter maneuvering system pods in the aft of the vehicle,
sure,
and the forward reaction control system in the forward, very hazardous commodities there, hypergols, oxidizers. So we had to basically gut those components. From the outside, you cannot tell, but if you looked inside, they look very different now. Some components are being reused. Shuttle main engines are the biggest one I would give an example of there.
Right.
We now have replica main engines that are installed. The nozzles themselves are real flight nozzles previously used either in flight or in test. So once again, from the outside, it looks exactly the same. But if you were to look at the inside of the aft compartment, you don't have the power head and the things that make those engines so special.
Do you expect – I know there's some famous stories in early days, especially when the Saturn V out here at KSC was still outside of engineers and technicians going on and stealing isn't the right word, but, you know, taking parts away from the Saturn V to use in the shuttle program in some obscure way. Do you expect that kind of thing will still happen with the either Discovery or and or any of the other shuttles? Are they still out there to be used?
Well, right now we are underway with removing key components to use in the new Space Launch Systems program. So not many of those components came out of Discovery. Some did, but not many. But actually out of Atlantis and Endeavour, we are taking basically the entire main propulsion system out of the aft of those vehicles so that they can reuse those items on this new program. That, of course, helps them with cost, schedule, and so forth, and you can get an early jump on that as opposed to having to go through design and rebuild all this hardware. So we're definitely taking advantage of that where we can, but once again minimizing that with Discovery.
Yeah, and I was thinking as you've been – getting these orbiters back from their final flight, and they're not considered flight hardware, if you will, anymore, and after you do the safing and all that, but as you're in there crawling around, getting access to compartments and places that maybe you haven't seen for a long time, either through a major mod period or major maintenance period, or a plane is just, you know, a panel's never been open since the thing was built. Are there any stories, Stephanie, about stuff you found? I know that when Columbia was still with us, they used to complain about gypsum sand from the STS-3 mission still found in the orbiter 20 years later. And I think there's a story out there, and you don't have to tell me if it's true or not, but after one of the orbiters was delivered from Palmdale as a brand new orbiter, there was like a wrap of potato chips or a cookie wrapper or something found in an obscure pot inside. Have you found any weird things that you can tell us about or anything unusual that surprised you as you started taking these things apart?
Yeah, you know, the thing that comes to my mind is, and this was intentional, but we as the ground processing team did not know it, the actual STS-132 crew, which was on Atlantis prior to the very final flight, had decided to place their mission sticker and sign the wall in the crew module, and they had done it in an area that is not easily visible when you're on the ground. Obviously, in orbit, you have different, you know, orientations.
Yeah, sure.
And so we actually saw it doing inspections and taking things out of the vehicle, had to use a mirror, actually, to even see where it was. And so that was a nice surprise to us of them, you know, wanting to kind of leave their mark on the vehicle and kind of say a final goodbye to her. So, of course, that was intentional. And then we also had a plaque that the 135 crew flew on Atlantis and actually flew it for our ground processing team and had it there and gave it to us afterwards. So those kind of things. But going back to your history type of things that we've seen, I think the funniest one that I heard about was there was a dead tree frog that we found when the vehicle came back from California after one of the maintenance periods, and there was a big argument between the Palmdale folks and the Kennedy folks as to, well, who allowed this to happen? Was it already there when it left Kennedy or whatnot? And they narrowed it down to the fact that this dead tree frog was not indigenous to Florida, therefore it had to have been picked up in California.
Okay.
Therefore, we were alleviated of that concern.
Stephanie, stand by. We're going to take one final break, come back with you for a couple more questions. This is great stuff. I'm Jim Behnke, listening to Space Talk on WMMB.
Listen to Space Talk on the web at WMMBAM.com.
And welcome back, everybody, as we begin our final segment of today's edition of Space Talk. Reminding you that you can stay in touch with us throughout the week. If you're on Facebook, just search for Space Talk. And if you're on Twitter, our tag is Space Talking. As always, for one-stop shopping, visit WMMBAM.com, keyword Space Talk, for everything you need to know about the program. And as we do continue along today, we're going to take a quick moment for a look at our local launch forecast. And, well, it's not a launch into space, but as we have been talking about on the program today with Stephanie Stilson, Shuttle Discovery set to depart from the Kennedy Space Center atop its 747 carry aircraft on Tuesday. World's largest biplane is targeted to take off at about 7 a.m., give or take a little bit, from KSC. It'll head south and make a low pass over the Space Coast near the beaches of Cape Canaveral and Cocoa Beach. If the pilots follow the path that I've seen them most commonly take, they'll probably fly Discovery slightly inland, more or less over US-1 down to about Patrick Air Force Base, and then turn north to fly along the beaches. I've seen them go down to the Galley Causeway a couple times. Patrick seems to be the most common turning point. If you want a nice look at the shuttle flying overhead, and you don't want to go up to the visitor complex for any reason, any beach along Cocoa Beach, Cape Canaveral, the pier, Jetty Park is all going to be outstanding places to go. It'll make one last low pass over the Space Center, about 7:20 or so, depending on how long it takes to do the beach pass, and then head on up to Dulles. Again, as we heard Stephanie talk about the weather up there, if the weather's good around the Washington area, they're going to fly some low passes over the National Mall. You might check into your local news channels or NASA TV. At the very least, keep an eye on the web for the next couple days. I have a feeling there's going to be some pretty spectacular pictures coming out of this whole thing. As I mentioned earlier, I'll be at the side of the runway saying goodbye to Discovery along with Stephanie and her team. I'll be calling into the Bill McLive show here on WMMB and let everyone know when Discovery's off the ground, give you a chance to run outside and see this thing fly by. As far as the more conventional kind of launch, the one with fire in the flame trench, the next planned blastoff from the Space Coast is the SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket, set to fly on April 30th at 12:22 p.m. Again, we'll try to have live launch coverage here on WMMB. Falcon 9 is going to be carrying the company's Dragon spacecraft to rendezvous with the International Space Station. If all goes well, the crew aboard the station will reach out to Dragon with a robot arm, grab hold of the unmanned cargo ship, and berth it to the Harmony node. Should be a great mission. We wish them all a lot of success. This is an important, critical mission for the commercial space industry. A lot of people are keeping an eye on this thing, as we will too. Of course, for more information about all the various launches scheduled around the world, do jump on the web to WMMBAM.com, keyword space talk, and look for the link to our launch forecast. And so with that business out of the way, Stephanie, back to you, and thanks again for being with us. You mentioned your ground processing team, a couple teams, and I want to give you a chance to brag on them a little bit. Tell us a little bit about who this team is, who they make up, how big they are, what are some of these folks here, what are their experience?
Sure. Well, the majority of the team are made up of United Space Alliance employees, so that's engineers, technicians, quality, safety, and so forth. And then we have a much smaller group that are the NASA equivalent of that as well. We have about 100 people actively on what I'll call the transition retirement of the orbiter team. And majority of that is United Space Alliance folks. And so what a great job by them. You know, no one out of the Kennedy Space Center wanted to quit flying space shuttles. But these folks have really jumped in and, you know, they're dedicated to doing a good job up to the very end. And so they have been very on task about everything. And you know, this is an important mission. This is just like putting a vehicle into space for us, where we have been assigned a task and we're going to accomplish that to the best of our ability. And how fortunate for us to be able to do that, to be a part of the space shuttle program right until the very end. And I think I share that sentiment with my entire team.
Oh, and that, you know, and I'll just echo that because, you know, I mean, we know the reality is that USA has got a cloudy future, and we've already seen a lot of our friends and neighbors laid off. This team, I'm sure some of your best have had a chance to go work elsewhere or do other things and to stick it out to the very end like this. I mean, I think this is really something heroic for them to, you know, to do, and it just speaks to the can-do spirit. It speaks to the spirit of the workforce at Kennedy Space Center that made all these miracles happen through this whole time. Stephanie, what's going to be next for you and sort of the NASA team is when you're done with this job? You still got Endeavor to do. You still got to get Atlantis over to the visitor complex. You know, so you got another year or so of work to do. What happens to everybody after that? Do you know yet?
You know, for me personally, I have no idea, and I need to start looking into that. I just have been a little bit busy and haven't had a chance to put much thought into it. But, you know, goodness sake, working for NASA, there's always opportunities, and so I'm very fortunate to be in that situation. And maybe I'll look to take a stint at another center or at headquarters or somewhere and kind of round out my experience in that regard. You know, commercial crew is out there, our expendable launch vehicles, this new space launch systems, Orion, plus our whole ground processing effort that basically runs everything that happens out at the Launch Complex 39 area. So a lot of opportunities there. Contractors, you know, a little more of a fear there as to where they're going to go and what they're going to do. Hopefully we pick up more contracts and things in the area with the big companies like Lockheed and Boeing and so forth, and they can pick up those skills because we have such a great plethora of skills still out there that would be great to move on to these new programs. So, you know, we're doing the best we can to keep positive about that and ensure that everybody finds their niche after the shuttle program ends.
And, Stephen, I'll just tell you personally, you know, in public like this, you know, you've been a great spokesperson for KSC and NASA as a Discovery Flow director, and through this whole process, all the media interviews you've done, the accessibility that you've made. I mean, I know technically you have the day off and you're spending a half hour with us today. You know, you have a great job as a color commentator for the space program and any media outlet that would have you. I'm telling you that right now.
Well, I may look for your recommendation, so hang on to that.
I'll write a letter. Well, good. And just give, with about another 30 seconds left to spend time with you, Stephanie, just tell us real quick. You're going to say goodbye to Discovery. What's that going to be like for you to finally say goodbye and when it leaves KSC here?
Yeah, you know, for me, I'll get to see it, obviously, in Smithsonian at the hangar there, space hangar there, and have some time, hopefully, to myself to think about that a little bit. But we're rushing right into the Enterprise work. And so for me, I'm very focused on the job at hand. And so that's going to, I think, keep me from thinking too much about saying goodbye. I think when it'll hit me more is when I get back to Kennedy after we've delivered Enterprise and I walk over to the orbiter processing facility and Discovery's no longer there.
Yeah, well.
Or the vehicle assembly building where she's been sitting for the past month and she's not there. So, you know, I'm used to having the opportunity to see this vehicle up close whenever I want to, and that's not going to be the case anymore. And I think at that point it'll really hit me, and it'll be a very empty feeling for me, I believe, because I've been so involved with not just the vehicle itself but the team, and this is one step closer to all of that going away.
Well, I know as a parent, when you say goodbye to your kids growing up to college and moving on, I have a feeling it's going to feel very much like that when we say goodbye to Discovery. Stephanie did a great job today. Thank you for your insight and your cooperation and your availability. We'll wave to you at the runway on Tuesday and just, you know, continued good luck and success and keep up the good job. And I know we'll talk to you again here as we say goodbye to some of the other orbiters. So thanks for today.
Thank you, Jim. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, thanks a lot. Hey, we're saying goodbye to Stephanie Stilson, and I really do appreciate what she's done for us here today. Hey, next week on Space Talk, my guest is going to be Patty Stratton, recently of United Space Alliance. Patty's been on the show before, and we've asked her to return because this Saturday, the National Space Club Florida Committee is going to present her with this year's Kurt Debus Award, named for the first Kennedy Space Center director. It's the biggest space award in Florida. We're going to have a big party for her on Saturday night, and then together we'll be on the show Sunday to continue the celebration. That's all for now. Space Talk is a production of Mylas Solutions and is brought to you thanks to the generous help of our supporting sponsors, Space Florida, Boeing, Abacus, SpaceX, and United Launch Alliance. My thanks to Sean Williams for manning the ops station for today's program. Please join us next Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time for another live hour of Space Talk. Stay tuned now as WMMB presents a weekend edition of the Best of Bill Mick Live. I'm Jim Banky, and we'll talk to you again real soon.